Aloud.
Hello, fearless leaders. Welcome back to Aloud. Today's episode's a little different. Last week on the show, we had on Noah Reese and Kim Havens, the two co-founders of Women's Executive Network Leadership Educational Platform, Kahila. And today, I am going to be sharing with you a separate conversation I had with them on their podcast called Conversations at Basecamp. The topic of this conversation is how to ask for and get what you want. Now, this isn't something I talk about too often, but I used to be a business school professor. One of the key things that I used to teach, one of the key courses I would teach to MBAs and undergrads and executive MBAs, is negotiation. The skills and theories around negotiation and how to get what you want. By far the biggest takeaway for me from everything I learned about negotiation in the process of teaching that course and preparing for it is how rarely people actually even know what they want. How rarely we actually look at the full spectrum of things we might ask for, and how we are just so prone to put ourselves in the box of asking for, you know, what someone else offers us plus 5%, or, you know, what's what we thought we wanted minus 50%, the whole split the difference idea. So this podcast is going to be really interesting for you to listen to through the lens of conscious leadership, which is the one that we typically are spending most of our time in here on this show. In this podcast, I'm going to talk about zone of genius and how it relates to how to ask for and get what you want. I'm going to give you some actual strategies for having real life negotiation conversations so that you can increase the lifetime value in a monetary fashion, but also in many other ways of your career. Now, how this relates to last week's episode, where I was actually talking with the co-founders of Kahila here on Aloud, is that the two of them have been very masterful in my experience of identifying what they want and not being afraid to ask for it and stand for it and say no to what they don't want. And in fact, the way that they designed their own business very much stemmed from each of them on their own sitting down and saying, what do I want for myself and my own life now that I am a mother who's now established in my professional career. So if you have not yet heard that episode, I encourage you at some point to go back and listen to that one as well so you can hear the backstory behind Kahila. Without further ado, here is how to ask for and get what you want.
You are allowed to be whole. Allowed.
When you were born, you were whole, perfect. Then somewhere along the way, you learned that parts of you were not allowed here. What are the pieces of you that you've put into the basement? The parts of you that we cannot see anymore or that you cannot even remember? And how can you reclaim the wholeness that is your birthright? I'm Dr. Camille Joyce, and I'm here to join you in exploring these questions and many more you didn't even know you were allowed to ask. You are allowed to grow. You're allowed to dream. You are allowed to be exactly who you are and to become the next version of who you want to be. Start your journey of exploration with me right now on Aloud.
Welcome, everyone. So good to have you here. So today's conversation, are you asking for what you really want, or are you asking only what you think you can get? I know that is a big thing to think about. Dr. Camille Joyce joins us to share her insights and tips on how to reach for and achieve your dreams by getting answers to the questions you didn't even know you were allowed to ask.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for being here today.
And thanks for your patience, yes. So for more information about Camille, please do head back to the platform, but you'll hear from her now. So usually it's not a straight line to where we are today. Usually there's some zigs, some zags in the way, in the path on the way to today. We like to start at the beginning. Tell us, how did you get to where you are today? You've had a windy path from actress to startup to PhD. Tell us.
What am I doing? You know, basically, Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things in retrospect, I think one's life and career makes a lot more sense than it seems like when you're in the middle of it, or at least in the quarter of it. I'd say here in the middle, I feel more on purpose and like I know what I'm doing, and like I feel so much more connected to my inner intuition about what my path is. And my path, I fully expect my path to keep changing. So as you mentioned, Noah, I've had many lives. I've also, in addition to the jobs you've mentioned, you know, being a professor, business school professor, being an actress, being a startup executive, startup leader, marketing manager, agency person. I also have been a bartender, a waitress. I have been I've done catering, of course, because I was an actress, and I've sold sandwiches on the beach in Barcelona. And the day that I did that, unfortunately, I didn't know. My husband and I went out to do it to make some spare change while we were living out there, in addition to our education consulting company that we started. And it unfortunately was the day of the International Food Festival. So we didn't sell a lot of sandwiches, but we ate a lot of bread and broke our Atkins diet. So yeah, how did I get where I am today? I think, long story short, first I pushed really hard against who I am and what my innate gifts are. After acting, it was clear to me that if I wanted to keep acting, I was going to need to keep dieting. And I just reached a point in my early 20s and I saw what that was going to look like. And I decided I didn't want to do that to myself anymore. It just wasn't healthy for me. But I use acting every day. And everything I learned in getting to know a character, I use now in my coaching practice as well, because it's all about me getting inside of your head and your heart. But after, you know, that didn't work out, I really was desperately trying to figure out what's the job for me that blends together all the different things I love. And I remember showing my parents a list one day of the things I wanted my job to include. And it included things as far ranging as gardening and cooking and psychology and writing. And they're looking at me like, you just got to get a job. But, you know, today, like I actually do get to do all of those things. Sometimes I garden while I coach, but I had to go through this really painful process of doing, you know, what I might call the wrong jobs for me to be able to land here. So while I was getting my PhD, which was my big attempt to kind of prove to the world that I was a credible human being, even though I was 25 years old, I developed just crippling back pain. And it's actually pretty common, at least amongst my fellow students at the Haas Business School at Berkeley, for really, really painful physical symptoms to show up as you are going through your PhD. And for us, most of us complete that program in about 6 years. And that's a long time to be in pain. One of my girlfriends lost feeling in both of her hands while she was trying to type her dissertation. So I had really bad back pain, mostly from studying and low self-care. And my many-year journey, which included kind of selling all my furniture, quitting a bunch of my jobs, changing cars, and just a lot of soul work, honestly, it taught me that my body doesn't like to sit down. My body doesn't like to do that job of being a professor and to sit doing research and crunching data all of the time. I love doing it, but if I'm honest with myself, I never was that great at it. I was good enough to get through, and I used my scrappy intuition, which is more my startup skills, to actually make it and get a professor job. Once I kept just learning to listen to my pain and listen to my body, and I prioritized it, I was able to start walking again. And my career gradually got adjusted to one that fit my body. And at that time, I thought it was just about my body speaking up. Now I realize I think a lot of the pain also came from the tension I was holding, because I was living in my zone of excellence and I was not living in my zone of genius. It was effortful for me. It wasn't my flowy, happy place that keeps me vibrant and alive. So
That's the real story.
Yeah, you know, I love that. It's
read my CV, but that's the real story.
Right. It's very ziggy and zaggy, but I love that you realize it's too bad that it had to be such a severe physical pain. But I think this happens actually to a lot of people. I mean, as you said, you saw it with other PhDs, candidates, but like, I think it's common out there in the bigger world. People carry a lot of physical pain and stress, and in their bodies, and they just sort of manage through that for years and years. And that's just terrible for us, both mentally and physically. It's a toll.
We have a question. Can you elaborate on the two types of zones you mentioned?
Sure. Yeah. So for those who aren't familiar with this concept, it's, you know, it's not my concept. It's one that I use a ton, and I can, you know, if you want, I can put together a post where I can add some links, and I'll put it up on the platform so you guys can get books and things like that I like on this topic. But there are basically four zones of being, and I only named two. So the first zone is the zone of incompetence. And that's the place where we don't like what we're doing. We are not naturally good at it. We're not adding value. In fact, we're probably subtracting value. It's just painful for everyone. The zone of competence, these are things that you get by. You're fine at them. For a lot of us, this includes things like, you know, paying our bill, paying a utility bill. Like, you know, it's not like I'm earning big gold stars, but I can do it, and I don't hate it. Most of the time, I don't mess it up. Zone of excellence. This is a zone that I believe most high achievers are living in most of the time, and the reason for that is we were trained to. So here's what the zone of excellence is. In my zone of excellence, I am doing something that I'm really good at. I'm great at it. I am probably recognized for it and paid for it and rewarded for it. I earn lots of gold stars. And a long time ago in school, I learned that gold stars are where it's at. But it's not something I necessarily am naturally gifted in. And it's something that if I keep doing it and doing it in exclusion, I will burn out. I will have anxiety. I won't feel fulfilled, and I won't understand why, because I appear to be so successful. So these are things we work hard to learn to be great at, and we do really enjoy them. But it's very different from that final zone, the zone of genius. And I'm estimating that, you know, most of you on this call spend less than half your time currently in your zone of genius, and it might be quite a bit lower than that. So my invitation for you is to think about right now, what is an activity that you can remember doing where you were effortlessly adding value to the world? This activity itself is life-giving for you. You would do it whether or not you got paid. In fact, you probably have paid to do it at one point. And you love it that much. And this is when you're in a natural state of ease and flow, and it brings you right into presence. It may be something really subtle too. It may not be a thing that you would ever list on a resume, or it may not be a position in a company. It may be something like, you know, establishing trust through your presence in a room, something subtle like that. So that's the zone of genius that I was referencing. And so once we can find our way into that zone, and we can be in our genius, whatever we're doing, then we are going to experience much greater success with a lot more ease. We might at first have judgment about it and think, well, it should be harder than this. Like, no one wants to pay for this. Like, I shouldn't, this isn't even work. Perfect, you found it. And that's really, really healthy. It's really
that's
healthy.
Where we all want to live, right? Where like effortless and I get paid to do this.
Yeah.
And it's joyful to do it. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I have a question for you on this, you know, asking and getting what you want. Is there what has been a big ask in your life that you've made that really shifted and changed your life? Mm-hmm. Something that comes to mind?
Absolutely. One event in particular comes to mind, and it is the one, this is kind of ironic given what I've already shared with all of you. It is the one that has most changed my life. So, when I was trying to get into the Berkeley PhD program, I was looking on the website. I applied to several different programs, but that's the one I really wanted to go to. And I was looking at the website and it said only 3% of applicants are admitted. And what's the profile of a typical applicant? Well, they typically have a bachelor's degree in that area. And that was not true of me. I studied mass communications and anthropology at UCLA. And then at Berkeley, I was in the business school. So I couldn't tick that box. Their GPA was probably, you know, closer to a 4.0. Mine was less. You know, their GRE scores were a little bit higher than mine, and they had research lab experience, and I had zero. You know, grad school was not on my radar at all while I was at UCLA. So I knew that I probably wasn't going to get in based solely on that. Of course, your essay matters and your life story and your experience, but there were some pretty big boxes I needed to tick. And I asked myself, what would Roy do? And Roy is my husband, and some of our friends actually have an acronym, WWRD, what would Roy do? And it's a really good question. And I thought, well, what Roy would do is he would walk into one of those professors' offices and he would ask to be on her research lab team, and he would not take no for an answer, and he wouldn't leave until she said yes. And this was the opposite of anything I would ever, ever do. But this was 2003 in the Bay Area. And I really did not like the company I was working at. I really didn't like the company, my job. I could see no future where, you know, me not going and getting a graduate degree was going to get me through the next few years because the economy had completely tanked. And so I did it. I just dared myself. I did it. I went into Jennifer Chapman's office and she said, I don't talk to people, you know, I get out. Like, she's a big deal. And, you know, I don't take people into my office ever. And I'm like, okay, well, let me just, you know, tell you a bit about me and tell me. And so I got on the research team, I impressed her. And that I think is why I got in.
That is such a great story. And I've never heard that from you. So you all know, I've known Kanil for many years, but I've never heard that story. I love it. I would hypothesize that Roy in this story is what would a man do for most of us in general. And the Kanil in this story is most women. Sweeping generalization there, I realize.
I think you're right.
Where I'm going with that is, what do you think is holding us back? Us being women, because we're all women on this call. What do you think is holding us back from the majority of us from asking for what we really want?
Yeah, good question. Sorry, there's some helicopter noise out there.
That's right. We were
What's holding us back?
In New York yesterday with sirens there and all good.
Life is happening right now. That's
yeah,
for sure.
Exactly.
So I believe the primary thing that's holding us back are our stories. I also want to name that there is such a thing as systematized oppression, and we are living in an oppressive society, and we all play our part in that. And as women, we are one of the oppressed classes, and I think it's really important to name that and to recognize it. And, you know, as much as I can change who I am, like, that is true, and it is true that when we work together, we can begin to create change. But a big piece of it is I need to be willing to examine my stories. And I have a lot of stories about being a woman. I have a lot of stories, and a lot of them don't make me super happy. A lot of them don't bring me to an empowered place. And if I don't recognize that I'm the one who's actually, maybe I heard that story somewhere else. I heard that story about me, that I'm in the way, that I shouldn't ask for more, that, you know, I should always get a yes because a no would just make me feel so ashamed. Oh my gosh, I shouldn't have asked for that. Like, if I heard that story and then I keep telling it to myself, I am now the storyteller. And I am the one who's acting into that role, even as much as I say that I don't want it to be true. So my work is to find those stories and question them, and not just question them like, is it true? Is it true? No, I want you to go even further than that. And here's the money question, okay? Am I willing to experience that the opposite of my story is at least as true as my story itself, at least as true, maybe more true than my story? So if I look at this story of, I shouldn't go into her office, you know, what's the opposite of that story? Well, there's lots of opposites. One of them is I should go into her office. Another one is I should go into everybody's office. Another one is I should have already been in her office. Another one might be she should come to my office. You know, a lot of different versions. And I could argue that any of them is true. And why is that? Because it's just a story. It's not a fact. So facts are just the things I can observe, and the stories are all the meaning I make of it. That's what holds us back. And we have stories about scarcity, about how we are supposed to show up, what's safe for us. A lot of us have a story. If I were to actually feel what I want and feel all the desire, I would be so disappointed and or freaked out and anxious about it and nervous that I would mess it up and it wouldn't actually happen. Or I'd be so disappointed. It's not really worth it. So we don't even let our, we forget to even flex the muscle of feeling our desire.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I would argue also that it's, you know, we're so afraid of the possibility of a no that we don't even try. And mm-hmm. yet, what's the worst that can happen? She could have just said, no, just, I don't have time for you. And you would have figured out another way, probably, or not. You could have figured out a different path. There'd be a different path.
On that note, you know, salary comes up as something that a lot of people and a lot of women especially don't ask for. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge missed opportunity. Can you talk to us about just your thoughts around that, like the lack of asking, even from the very beginning, what mm-hmm. you're missing out on by not, you know, again, just trying to grab what you believe is your fair and accurate salary
in
your, you know, world?
Completely. So salary, it has a fairly predictable trajectory. So what we do know is that your next salary is driven mostly by your current salary. So if you think about like, what does that line look like in your life? If you are asking and you're getting say even $2,000 less each time you negotiate for a job, your line is flatter. But if you are just daring yourself a little bit more over the course of a lifetime, the delta is huge. So the earlier you begin, the earlier we can train our daughters to ask for more, like because we don't do it enough. And then we end up feeling frustrated and then we blame everyone else, you know? It's so we need to ask for more because there is this trajectory. It's also true that you know, it's much easier to get an increase in salary at moments of career change than it is in the same position, same role. Now, leveling within companies, and there's, you know, quite a lot of order to this, it does kind of constrain the results of this a little bit, but I think it goes as well with power and promotions. So we know that in those moments where we are trying to please, because we're thinking that we're still in an interview process, but actually we are in our salary negotiation with our new employer. Those are the moments when I think a lot of us feel the most scared, like, oh, they're going to think I want too much. They're going to think I'm pushy. I'll wait till I get there, prove myself, and then I'll get the raise. No, your time to get the raise is when you walk in the door, and you're not going to get it unless you're willing to walk away. So this is one of the keys with any kind of negotiation. In negotiations, you know, theory, research, practice, there's a concept called BATNA, like B-A-T-N-A, and it stands for your best alternative to a negotiated agreement. BATNA.
Ooh, I love that. Is,
what's the best possible thing that you have? If this current conversation ends in a no, a complete no for you, and you lose this opportunity, what's your best alternative, outside alternative? So another mistake I see people making if they are wanting to maximize their, you know, their net worth, the value, the monetary value of their job at any given time, a mistake is thinking that I need to put all my focus on this negotiation, and now that I've got this job, bird in the hand, and I really want this one, then I'm going to stop applying and stop interviewing. In fact, so in any negotiation, when we're asking for what we want, the best way to gain power is to go and find a better alternative than your current best alternative. Your power in any negotiation is mathematically equal to the value of your best alternative. And that's a number that is, it contains also all of the subjective utility of an opportunity. So it includes things like, you know, if for me, and it definitely is, for me, flexibility is really, really important. The ability to work in an environment that is pleasing and healthy for my being, my body and my mind, that's really important. So I value those things highly, and I'm willing to earn less money because that's not as important to me as the whole picture of all of these. So if you summarize all of that, that's what you're trying to maximize.
Do you put like a weighted score on all the things that are important to you?
I have. And I know a lot of people do. My brother has crazy spreadsheets. You know, he's a hedge fund guy, but you can add a weighted value to each of the variables that are most important for you. And one of the best things to do here is, so for any of the key variables that matter to you, you know, probably salary is one, position, title, who you're reporting to, career development. There's so many different aspects, right? But you want to figure out what are all of those, and then look at your list. And then say, what's not on the list? What could I add to the list? This is helpful not just in you determining, you know, the value of any given potential offer. It's also really helpful in you shaping the conversation in the interview process or in the negotiation, in the conversation. And you know, this applies to career stuff, sales stuff, marriage stuff, kids stuff. It applies to all stuff. But the more you can do to expand the pie and bring additional elements of the negotiation in, the more opportunities you have to find a win for all solution. So not just a win-win, but a win for all. You know, I know for me right now in my negotiations, my kids are my stakeholders, and they are always in my mind. I'm looking for the win for all. What's a win for them and for me and for my husband and for my client and for my partners and my staff and all of that. So the win for all is possible because now we can make a bunch of different trade-offs and package and bundle up these variables together. And so maybe I'm willing to flex a little bit in this area and you don't know it. You're assuming that's the most important one for me. If I can bring more stuff into the conversation and just have much more transparency than we typically allow ourselves in negotiation, then we can find that thing that both of us are saying, this is actually more valuable to me as a whole. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want.
Yeah, and let's not forget that as women, we're also cracking the path wider for women behind us who are coming up behind us, so that what's becoming agitated now becomes normalized, you know, 5 to 10 years from here.
Heck yes.
I heard an awesome interview with Basma St. John, who's now the CMO at Netflix, and she is a single mom of an 11-year-old. And when she was negotiating for, I believe it was her previous job, she did that same thing of what else do I need to be thinking about in this negotiation? And she actually negotiated that if she was to be traveling for more than 3 days and therefore being away from her daughter, she either had to have carers, a carer paid for, or mm-hmm. her daughter was coming with her. And she negotiated that upfront in her salary, which... you know, she was super transparent to your point as well, which I just thought was so awesome.
Yeah. And that's a, you know, that's another one that's, I think a biggie is sometimes we want to pretend that our values are different than what they are. We want to look like the things we care about are the salary and the position, but in fact, what we most care about is something different than that.
Right.
And it's, if we don't even let and a lot of us don't even ask ourselves the question of what do I really want, right? I mean, I think that's the big takeaway I want everyone going away with here is, are you really, really asking yourself? So when I'm looking at, when I'm planning out a negotiation, you know, I'm going to want to look at what's the amount that I think would be great. Like I'd be really happy with it. And then there's a lower value than that, which is what's the value of my BATNA? So this would be my walk away point. If it's lower than this amount, then I'll walk away and I'll go and do the BATNA instead, right? Because I've already got that. But there's a third level here that most women I've worked with do not ever bother to specify or even feel into, and that is the champagne popper. That's the, if you were to be blown away by how amazing this offer was, blown away, like shocked, it's a champagne popper of an offer. You're gonna wanna host a party when you're done, you know, on Zoom, whatever. That's the top level. And if you don't reach high, reach there, then you have no chance of getting it. And you wanna be anchoring high. You wanna be starting at the top. So that, this is a really crazy statistic. The end result of the average negotiation is correlated, it's a correlation factor of 0.98 with the initial ask. Not your initial ask, the first initial ask. So there's a huge value in being the one to establish what's called the anchor, the value that anchors the rest of the conversation from that point forward. Because whoever establishes the anchor, they really own that correlation factor, and that's the greatest likelihood is it's gonna end up close to that factor. Now, of course,
I would think you might actually have this data, but I believe that it's often the women actually don't lead. I mean, a lot of people don't negotiate, but we do know that women often don't even lead with like, this is what I want. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, what's the salary you're willing to give?
Yeah.
Which is like, you put the other person in control, or you know, even if you're negotiating for yourself as an entrepreneur, same thing. It's like, I guess that person might pay for X versus being like, this is my value. Are you willing to pay for that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, the best thing that you can hear in response to that ask, a well-crafted ask, is no. Okay. If you're not hearing no, you have not asked for a big enough thing. You're leaving value on the table. So you've got to be hearing no's. You've got to go out and find some no's. No is the beginning of the conversation that leads to the big yes. And so we're looking for that. We're looking for that breaking point, right? And this is an auctioneering skill as well. It's like, they'll try to bring the audience up to a level where there's not going to be a taker. And then you might, you know, bring it down and then bring it back up. But like, you want to get to that place where people are just, I'm not sure anyone's going to bid on this. And then someone does, right? Someone always does. You want that person to be bidding.
So Cassandra, yes, I believe Keneal is saying that the offer is usually basically what the anchor is, or it's
the end result. The end result is highly correlated with the anchor, the initial ask. Now it doesn't.
I can think back to salary negotiations, and I can totally see that on both sides. Like when I threw it out there versus when somebody else led, I was like, I guess I'd work for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did I just take that?
Yeah. Or like, what are you planning on offering? Or what do people normally make in this position? Or,
right. Which I think that question throws out there all the time.
Do the research on your own. You know, you might want to know those things, but it actually would be better if before you even look at those kinds of data, you first ask yourself, what would make this worth it to me? What would make it good for me? What would make it a champagne popper? And because then you have a much more accurate reflection before you get anchored by what you read of what you actually want. Now, if you're not willing to hear no, that means your BATNA is probably really high and it's time to go and, you know, see if you can find a better BATNA. But if you're not willing to hear no because it just crushes you on the inside, that's such a common experience. And it's a beautiful opportunity for you to begin to check out some stories that you might have around scarcity and your place in the world and what you deserve. And it's not easy work. I mean, I'm not saying there's no overnight fix to that. That's a lifetime's work, is feeling like you deserve and that you are valuable.
Thank you for pointing that out, because I would not want people walking away from this conversation being like, oh, like shame that they haven't been asking, because I think it's hard. Again, as you said, like we're in a culture that we have not been trained to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's really important. We have a whole bunch of questions on this topic, so I don't want to move on yet. I'm going to get to some of the questions. So can you give some tips about negotiating while you're in the same position?
Mm-hmm.
Anything else but having an alternative position in mind?
anything else better? Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, so, because sometimes there's not an alternative position for you, and there may be, you know, you may be kind of like topped out for now, and you know that these leaders are going to be in place for a long time. And so if a lateral move is not what you're even looking for, that's also possible. Or maybe you're a manager and you don't want to keep moving up that manager train and you want to get into an individual contributor role. So there's lots of different reasons, you know, ways that you might negotiate out of a position. But if you're in the same position and you want to negotiate and increase the total value of that role for you, some things that you can ask for are, of course, you know, time is one of the resources that you're investing. So what can you do that can help you gain some time? This is a great example of, you know, I would like you to help me find the childcare. That's extremely time consuming work. So how about you guys help me do that? You can ask for, you know, you can ask for some additional assistance, like an EA or something. I feel is a big missed opportunity across the board is you can ask for funds so that you can hire a personal EA to help you with your life's administrative work that happens, you know, the stuff that you're up at midnight doing after you've already finished all of your other work and you're like, this is pretty brain dead, zone of competence, incompetence kind of stuff, and I don't like doing it, but it's got to get done. A lot of that is outsourceable. So you can actually ask for some funds to directly invest in a service like a great one is called Belay, B-E-L-A-Y. And that's a company that has a lot of, you know, a lot of them are prior full-time career people who are now mostly stay-at-home parents, and they have skills and they can start as low as 5 hours a week. And there are so many administrative tasks that I have on autopilot essentially that I don't do for myself. And when I do, I mess them up. So it's great. So that's one thing is time. Flexibility, investment in your continuing education, mentorship and access to mentorship, time to go and meet with mentors who are in other companies, you know, funding to attend, you know, a wide ranging variety of educational and cultural experiences than maybe you've been doing before for networking purposes. Because one thing we do know is the diversity of our networks in terms of not just demographic diversity, which is also part of it, but it's also, you know, diversity of the types of topics that you can have conversations with people about. That's a really big indicator of how valuable your network is going to be for your lifetime. So you might want more time to do that. You might want some funding, you might want access. And then of course there's, you know, the perks that we sometimes think we just have to suffer through, but you can definitely ask for, you know, upgrades to when we're traveling again, you can ask for upgrades on travel that maybe you weren't asking for. You can ask for a standing desk. And you can also ask to be connected with an executive who's maybe a couple levels higher than you, to kind of act as a sponsor for you. So this is something that's really helpful, for women is it's not just mentorship, it's sponsorship. I'm looking for somebody to champion me, to bring me into meetings and experiences that I wouldn't otherwise have access, and to really advocate for me when I am up for a promotion.
Right. And what about tips for negotiating? So like build, you know, how do you feel, hello small person, so that you feel more confident in being able to ask for those things if you're in the same position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. One moment, I'm going to do a little negotiation myself. Errol, it's time for you to leave this room and you can work outside the door, okay? Thanks, baby. Please close the door after you, gently. Thanks. All right.
2020 people, October 2020, should I say. we're well attuned to this now. So the question was, can you give some tips about negotiating when you're in the same position? So how do you get that confidence so that you can go and ask for those things?
Mm-hmm. All right. So for me, the easiest thing is faking it. And
what would Roy do?
Like you can fake it into, I'm going to stand up to show you guys this stuff. You can actually fake it into it becoming real. And there's some physiology to this. So probably a lot of you have heard that when you smile, it actually activates your brain in a way that releases the chemicals that make you feel happy. So smiling very quickly actually is a happiness drug. But the same also goes with posture. So everyone sitting wherever you're sitting, just put your shoulders like lower and kind of like collapse them in like this and just see how that feels. And now say, give me $1 million.
Give me $1 million.
And now, like roll them back and hold yourself broad, like even hold your arms out a little bit away from your body and be really like strong in your center where the gravity is coming straight down through your head, like all the way down into the ground and really like even like open up your pelvic floor and feel the earth below you. And now take a deep breath. Give me $1 million.
I deserve $1 million.
You deserve $1 million. I feel like $1 million. I don't care if you give me $1 million. I don't need $1 million. I feel so much more confident just by adjusting my body posture. And the confidence comes not from, I think I'm so great. It's, I don't freaking care. I don't care if I'm great or not. I feel good in my skin right now because I'm giving myself like some space. And coincidentally, and which is wonderful and great, the broader we hold ourselves, and we know this from Amy Cuddy's work, the broader we hold ourselves, these are actually power positions and we are perceived as more valuable and more powerful the broader we hold ourselves. So literally, if you're sitting in an armchair and your arms are in, you are not seen as valuable as if you put your arms out.
Take up space. Yeah.
Take up space, you deserve
it. It's true, if you think of when we were in person and when we will be again, but like when you see meetings or not even just even dinner parties where you see certain people and it is not always, but often say the men in the room and they're like, there are certain people who really take up space physically mm-hmm. that really command a lot of attention and confidence. I mean, you can feel they're very confident in their body too, mm-hmm. not just here. I like the mind body connection you're talking about.
I also want to acknowledge the point that you made of fake it, because if you're going in for a negotiation and you're not feeling, you don't yet maybe intellectually and emotionally yet really feel that you deserve that promotion or you deserve that salary raise, fake it and keep faking it till you make it, you know? And I think, again, that statement of what would Roy do, I think that's what men do so mm-hmm. much of the time is men fake it. And mm-hmm. they fake it, they ask for it and they get it. And so why not fake it till you make it?
I mean, part of most of our jobs is actually convincing people to do things. You know, most of us on this call. And so it's not even a trick or a cheat to do this. Actually, you're getting hired in part because confidence will make you more valuable. Like you are demonstrating value by doing that. You need to be able to walk into a room when you're feeling nervous and establish credibility quickly, establish likability quickly, and establish that you're powerful and that you're not gonna take no for an answer, but you don't need to be pushy about it in order to be grounded in it and strong, you know? So I think we worry like, oh, that, that really wouldn't be ethical, or it's, if you think about it, it's in everybody's best interest for them to want to value you more when you feel confident. But there's other things that you can also do. I mean, I've actually found that when I used to drive to auditions, I could pump myself up by talking and like trying to make my voice sound really confident as I told myself really great things about myself. It felt ridiculous at the time. I think I learned it on a Brian Tracy sales tape or something like that. But it felt ridiculous, but it actually really, really worked. And so I've stuck with that. And then I would say confidence is the byproduct of the present mind. So when we're present and we're not in the future, thinking about what's about to happen, what could happen, what we need to get done, what are they going to say, what are they thinking of me, how's that going to impact? We're not in the future, and we're also not in the past, like, oh gosh, what did I just say? Or, oh, I'm trying to remember the things I planned on saying. then we're in the present. And the present is just right now, right here with what's happening, what I can actually observe with my senses. That's it. And from that place, I am much less concerned about my confidence, and I'm much more able to connect to gratitude. So a gratitude practice is a fairly foolproof, fail-safe way to connect you with that person that you are when you are confident, and to connect you with presence.
I love that. I never connected gratitude to confidence, but it makes perfect sense. And it just makes sense, brings you back to the present moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Ooh, this conversation has gone so quickly. We just have a couple more minutes. Let's see, where do we want to go from here? We've got a couple, there are a couple questions. What about, so this goes, links into one of the questions we have from the community, but you know, for people who are trying to figure out what they should ask beyond the things that they've been, you know, research that they've done, when you think you might be selling yourself short, mm-hmm. how do you figure that out? What, like, beyond just like the actual, like, okay, well, like there's this range and maybe I'm in that range, but I really feel like I'm selling myself short here. Mm-hmm. How do you mm-hmm. figure that out? Mm-hmm. And then how do you also deliver that to your, you know, bring that circle back to like, to your manager?
So I really like this concept of the whole body yes. Whole body yes. So my practice, my commitment to myself is I don't say yes unless I have a whole body yes. If I don't have a whole body yes, I have a no. Now what is a whole body yes? It means that my gut says yes, like my body physically feels at ease and my energy is flowing through me easily. My emotions say yes. Doesn't mean I'm not scared or any emotion, but my emotions are, I'm attracted to this yes. And then my head says yes. Like it makes sense to me. It checks out. And I also think there's a thing about like my spirit or my soul says yes. I mean, sometimes you just feel called to do something and you're not even sure why. It might not even make sense to your head, but that's a thing that I actually personally listen to my spirit's yes, and I let that one veto the rest because that one doesn't steer me wrong. But if I don't feel I have a whole body yes, and the more you practice like staying rigorous about this, the quicker you'll feel it. Then I know it's a no, and I get curious about why that is. Now sometimes I may not have a whole body yes to some element, let's say of my job. Okay, there's a project I'm on that I don't like. And I've thought, okay, here's what's going on with the job. It's just this one project. And I'm going to see if I can create a different solution here. Maybe there's a way that I can get creative and look for a win-for-all solution. But say that it's not what happens. I'm not able to. I'm still assigned to this project. It's critical for my role. I might have a whole body yes to keeping my job. And that's the higher level whole body yes for me. So I think sometimes we can let our focus of attention dwell on the things that are missing or that are wrong. And we forget that there's a bigger reason why we're here, why we're doing this thing. And maybe it's not even because you love the job so much. It's because right now you're too, you know, life is presenting a lot of challenges already, and it's not a good time for you to make a change, whatever it is. But when I feel like I'm leaving value on the table, I'm going to feel it in that way. I'm not going to feel the whole body yes. And when that happens, you can always ask for some time to just even like, I need, give me a few seconds. Something's coming up for me. I just want to kind of check this out and make sure that I'm really clear. You can ask to sleep on it. You can say, I'd like to get back to you in 2 weeks. You can say, I need some time to think about this. I'm not sure exactly when I'll have an answer, but if you'd like to come back and check in and see where I am with it at some point, or if your timeline changes and you need me to answer more quickly, let me know. But right now I'm not quite a yes right now. And I'm going to go figure out what a yes would look like. So whenever we have a no, we always have a yes to something. We just need to figure out what the yes is. Right. So the other thing is that power structures like to present us with boxes. They, if you're designing a complex organization, of course you need to put structure in place. It's what makes it work. However, there are timelines and there are timelines. And sometimes you don't have a whole body yes to waiting for the next official opportunity where requests are allowed. And you know that if that were to happen, your work quality would suffer, your home life would suffer, whatever the thing is, your body. So in those cases, you can always ask for, can we have a conversation about this now? Actually, I do need to get this resolved sooner. And here's when. But when we're not specific and we're not creating clear agreements, and we let things kind of keep just lingering, then maybe the opportunity doesn't ever come around. But we can always create new conversations, and we can always go back and renegotiate agreements that have already been sealed. We can always renegotiate.
I think also you mentioned, and it's the answer to one of the questions, what happens when my current employer doesn't offer me anything that I want? You have the ability to think about it. One, take the time. Two, and three, I would say also figure out what a yes would look like for you. You don't have to wait until you're offered it. The whole point of today's conversation is how to ask for what you want. Mm-hmm. And so using those tactics that you mentioned earlier and some of the strategies you mentioned earlier would be, I guess, some ways to get to what you want is to ask for it.
Yeah. And really, guys, I'm not giving you any guaranteed ways to secure what you want. Okay, like make no mistake, if you're not willing to hear no, you are not going to get what you want. So that has to be part of the equation. And that's why addressing our stories around scarcity and what we deserve is like, that's the foundational psychological work here. And that's great work to do with a coach. And you can lean on your sisters, like, you know, ask people to pump you up. Like what you want, there's a reason you want it, and it's a good reason. And it doesn't even need to be a good reason to anybody else or even to your own head. But I really think that our innate wisdom gets summarized and comes in the form of our desire. And so when we go with our desire, it's going to steer us in the right direction. Like just with my back pain, I just wanted to not be in pain anymore. And I was beyond, there was nothing else I could do at that point. I didn't think it was going to lead me here. I had no idea, but this ended up being exactly the right place for me. Mm-hmm. Gotta trust the process.
Totally. Well, that is a perfect spot to end. Thank you for today. I know we didn't get to everyone's questions, but there was a lot in there.
We'll actually post the questions in the platform because, to your point, Kanil, we have an incredible well of wisdom in this community of which Kanil is a part. And we can all pump each other up and answer those questions together in the community. Also, feel free to reach out and connect with Kanil. Her details, her website are listed in the platform. Kanil, thank you so much. My big takeaway is get to a whole body yes. I think that's the quotable for me. Thank you for your time. Thank you, everyone, for your time today. And a reminder to step up, ask for what you want, and be willing to accept a no, but give yourself permission to ask for what you want.
Yeah. Thank you, for everyone, for coming. And what great questions. I'll look through these and see if I can address anything on the platform. Feel free to ping me there if other things come up, and I'll do my best to support you however I can. And, you know, if you're not going to ask for what you want for you because you don't deserve it and you're not convinced of that yet, that's fine. Please do it for everyone else on this call. Like, when you succeed, we succeed. We are all in this together.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. We'll see you all next time. Have a great day.
Good. Bye-bye.